I'm starting the recording. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's that bread time.
Wait, could I try to do like the intro? Hey, yo, it's that bread time. Okay. Welcome to Bread Time. Today, we're here with a very special guest, Mills Baker, who is a design manager at Quora. And of course, we have the usual hosts of the show. My name is Charlie Dietz, and this is
Gabriel Valdivia. And today, we want to talk about this concept of gaming and how gaming manifests itself in our lives, in our career, in the products that we work on, and generally as a concept, how we apply it in design. Have you ever met somebody who's like, I'm not into games?
Are you? Absolutely. I'm surrounded by people who have borderline contempt for games, particularly if those games fall under the category of sports.
Oh, I agree with that, actually.
I knew it. I'm in a weird position because, I don't play sports, although I watch sports. I'm not actually particularly good at or generally very conversant about games. David, my friend and the head of design here, he games are kind of a big part of his life. And so he shares a lot about them. And so I pick up all this ambient interest in games. But I always feel a bit like a charlatan because I'm not a true games person myself. But in any event, I do agree with him broadly that there's something very, very deep about games. And the thing that always seems striking about them to me is that both games and life have this property of needing to be difficult in order to be valuable. And that's an incredibly obnoxious quality that reality has. You know, I think most of us know this from personal experience that you have your hopes and dreams set on goal A. You know, the initial version of this is I would like to someday not live under the oppression of my parents' regime, and I can't wait until I'm free. Then you acquire your freedom finally, and it turns out once it's the new baseline, it's worth nothing. And now you need a partner or a career, and you get that, and now it's the next partner, the next career, and so on and so forth. And this property whereby anything that is finally stable immediately loses interest is the core of how games work. You know, a game that you have an immediate cheat code to, for example, loses interest very quickly. And I think there's something almost very special about that. Sometimes when I'm playing a game, I do have the sense that, you know, games are just, they're just microcosms of the universe. And in the same way that every piece of progress brings more difficulty, every level gets harder. But if it didn't get harder, you wouldn't be happy. But you're certainly not happy that it's gotten harder. That all of that just kind of reminds me of a lot of like fundamental human organismic psychological properties that I find pretty amusing.
Okay. I just went to the Wikipedia page for game because I wanted to have like some sort of formal context as to what we're talking about. So a game is a structured form of play, usually undertaken for enjoyment and sometimes used as an educational tool. Games are distinct from work, usually carried out for remuneration, which is a funny word, and from art, which is more often expression or aesthetic ideological elements. Really challenging definition here because it's kind of like putting its pole in the dirt and saying that it's not exactly what I want to say it is.
Yeah, I think that definition is totally deranged. Actually a bit surprised that it's Wikipedia, but I think that's completely wrong. First off, I think it begs a number of questions. Like, you know, it sort of says, well, you know, hey, look, work, that's for payment. Games, that's for play. A lot of people, I don't think, would be comfortable with the stable division of how what you get from work is pure payment, nor of what you get from games is pure play. And of course, you know, at an abstract level, reward is reward. And so all of these things are closed systems in which there are certain types of behaviors that are rewarded or not. Rewarded by other humans, rewarded by your bank account, rewarded by the AI you're playing against or the score on top of the screen. I think that's a kind of a flimsy definition.
I enjoy games. I enjoy playing video games specifically. I enjoy when I bring elements of what I find enticing about the game experience into my life. So for example, I want to be motivated in the things I do. So when I think of myself as leveling up in things, as I grow, I'm actually trying to like have those same feelings that I have in games and bring them into the work I do to make me more aggressive aggressive in doing them. Okay, games are magical in the way that they motivate me to do something that doesn't matter at all, right? There was a time in my life where I was not focused, and therefore I wasn't accomplishing things in the way that I thought I should be. At some point, I decided I want to game my life so that I am moving towards goals constantly, which is my to-do list, essentially. And if I'm moving towards those goals and knocking them off the to-do list, I'll see progress. And honestly, it ended up feeling that way by building this simple game into my life of completing my to-do list and constantly adding to my to-do list to keep me going forward. I found myself more motivated to accomplish things in a single direction. Mm-hmm. And one more element to this, which is there's something called the rap game. This was a popular term, maybe starting in the 90s, 80s, maybe or something. I don't know. The idea of the rap game is like, I'm going to do and say whatever to be in the number one spot. That's an oversimplification by a zillion times, but I want to get to the number one spot. And to play the rap game, you can play it many different ways. But the idea is that there is a competition, and the competition leads to better output.
I'm into that. I mean, one of the things that's valuable about games as an abstract concept is this idea of competing. And competing has an implied kind of playing field that whoever you compare to or you compete with, you think of as a peer. And I think that is a powerful kind of mindset in your career because it gives you a license to act in a certain playing field that you may not feel qualified for. If Mills, you're a smart guy, if you want to compete with other smart guys, let's say Mark Zuckerberg, then now you're giving yourself a license to be in that same playing field, which I think is in the context of a career, I think is very powerful because for somebody who is competitive, you can then, you know, create those goalposts like you were saying, Charlie, and push forward in that sense.
Yeah, it's interesting, Gabe. When you say that, it made me realize, and Charlie, your story made me realize this as well, that I think in a certain way, I can probably describe a lot of what's wrong with me psychologically simply by describing the ways in which these types of ideas are not native to me. So to give you one example, when I'm depressed, for example, when I'm going through difficult periods, I find myself doing things like, building to-do lists sometimes, rarely, and they're short, unambitious to-do lists, but I do it. And checking things off of them does give me an incredible sense of, what it really does is it reduces guilt. I actually don't get a high from it so much as I avoid the persistent low that I'm feeling. But at the same time, I've never actually built this into a larger system whereby I identify goals, decide what the scoring function is, and then begin to get better and better trying to approach things. And partly because I'm so fundamentally cowardly that I have the property many young entitled people have of not really wanting to enter into the field of play. And the analogy for this in my games life, and this is something that drives David absolutely berserk, I think, or at least fills him with contempt, is that I play every game on the easiest possible setting, and I will use cheat codes, and I never get tired of it. I would actually play a version of Tetris that only dropped long blocks, and I would never get bored of it. Every time I would go, all right, I got a Tetris, because I'm actually a very good person. And I actually think there's something pretty deep about that as well. I think you could probably even you could categorize people somewhat in terms of how they respond to games, how much they want to be pit against equals, compete, and find the best in themselves or identify and achieve goals, as opposed to people like me who are mostly trying to avoid suffering, avoid difficulty, even avoid being tested. You know, I'm the kind of person who plays the sorts of games I think you see people playing mindlessly, you know, in airports. I'm just there to consume brain cycles.
So, okay, like I want to unpack this more. We're going to get deep into your psychology here. So the thing is, you said you don't really like games that much, right?
Well, I love some of them, and I've had some peak experiences. I would be remiss, for example, not to mention Journey. Obviously, I think like many people, I was affected by Journey enormously, and I've loved some games, and every now and then a game will be so special that it will pull me out of my infantile laziness and actually cause me to devote time and energy to getting better at it, but it's quite rare.
But the games that you do enjoy that pull you out of your infantile laziness, do they have the same properties of the games that you dislike? For example, I think something that bothered you was like, oh, if a game is overly challenging, that might potentially reflect on your psyche in some sort of way, and it would cause you to feel unpleasant. But are the games that you've enjoyed also, do they have these same challenges, or are they more like supportive? supportive and less challenging?
Well, sort of weirdly, often they're just as challenging or more so. And I'm not sure how clearly I'd ever thought about this until your question. But the property that games have that I will beat my brain against the wall for is usually that they either have narrative elements or narrative content or narrative structure of sufficient quality that as a human being, I want to know what happens. And I often think that this is a very naive way to play games, but I'm not irritated by it. It's not something I hate about myself because I almost feel like innocent because of it. In other words, frequently I will be unable to stop playing a game no matter how hard it is because I care about the story or the world or the ideas implied. Journey would be an example where it wasn't like the story is very abstract in the game Journey, but the meanings and the symbolism and what I sort of felt I could take experientially from the game was at a level of art, I thought. And so Journey isn't a difficult game, obviously, but it was a game that I would play through quite happily. And then there are many other games that are actually just straightforwardly difficult that I'll devote time to. But again, it's usually for that reason, the narrative reason.
Yeah, see, I'm thinking like you're an essentialist, right? Like the story could be compelling to you because you might feel like you can gain something from completing it and learn the story, and maybe it'll reflect on your psyche, which affects you positively in your real life, essentially, right? Sometimes games are just about like crafting or pulling a lot of stuff together or building in a mass of something, which is desirable for probably other reasons than the essential, right? Like building up a supply of ambiguous object is less desirable than knowing if I complete this game, I might learn something about myself and be able to enact it in my real life.
Yeah, I mean, it might even be a little bit more degraded than that in the sense that I often find myself, I don't know if you'll ever have an experience like this, but sometimes I'll hear about a movie that I can tell is garbage and I'll look it up and I'll read on Wikipedia the plot summary, and especially if it's some kind of garbage sci-fi movie. 2 hours later, I'll find myself on the wiki maintained by hardcore fans reading about the furthest extensions of the canon universe. This happened to me with Dune. I love the book Dune. I have no intention of reading the sequels. I definitely don't need to know what the sequels describe as being the essential conflict between the original computer race and the aliens, you know, any of that. But I can't stop. Essentialist, I think, is it's a generous way to describe it. There might even be a kind of a completionist neurotic element there.
We've gone deep in games and kind of like talked about video games as a way to narrow it down. And I'm curious if you guys are interested in maybe the appropriation of game or like gamification of things. And to me, it means kind of using instant gratification or maybe short milestones of gratification that kind of add up to a larger sense of progress. And that could be applied to, you know, your life, your career, a product or whatever. And this idea of taking game theory and applying it to the way you execute a certain goal.
Something I'd really like to talk about is mobile devices brought into our lives the ability to have a touch interface with actual physics in it, right? So like if you think about what Mario brought to video games, which was like an incredibly like engaging jumping experience, like the whole point of Mario is you're like jumping and it feels good, right? Because those physics are being represented from real life into a video game. I think like touch interfaces with all of these physics is also a very engaging thing. You want to pull down to refresh. You want to swipe back to do these things. There's these physical things that are being represented through this digital interface that feel very enticing. And I think like people in general don't talk enough that like, oh, hey, like the reason I actually enjoy using this device in a lot of ways is because of those feelings that I get from the interactions.
Yeah, I think physics plays a big role. Also, another part of games that I think has carried through product design is this idea that you can actually impact the end result, like as opposed to a traditional media like film or a book or something where there's a definite beginning and end. I think in video games you can influence where the story goes or where the how the story unfolds, and I think that it's also part of the product design experience of like how you can have agency over how you experience what you're using. This idea that you can edit and you can directly manipulate the objects in front of you, I think that's something something that I think I usually attribute it to gaming, something that feels very tangible and very like malleable.
Yeah, there's this super interesting relationship between a lot of these things that I think what's often fun about discussing games is that you move really rapidly from like the superficial and the fun to what seems like the profound and the deep. You know, so you talk about sort of like game feel, which sounds superficial, and yet game feel is really, really deep. There's something hard to reduce about it. It doesn't seem like it's the kind of thing, for example, that machine learning will ever reliably produce in video games. There's something of the physical in it. There's something of what feels special physically to animals like ourselves. And that's all I think, you know, there's a quality of craft and art there that's really exciting. Again, I know I keep mentioning it, but I thought one of the spectacular things about Journey was this very natural and yet thrilling game feel, particularly with respect to physics and flight. And I think there was a lot of subtlety to how they accomplished that. At the same time, like play in general has this property. A couple of days ago, I was watching my dog and cat play. When you see animals do something that isn't necessary, it's always exciting because you sort of have this sense that that's kind of how all of what we are began, you know, is the excess mental capacity to start doing things that weren't immediately necessary. In the case of play, simulating combat, simulating all kinds of instances that you might encounter in your life as an animal, simulating it while you're young with your fellow siblings in a safe environment. There's a lot of sophistication involved in that. And that's what games are in many respects, especially competitive games. I mean, what's so fun about a game like, for example, Mafia or Werewolf or whatever is you just take like six rules and all of a sudden people are doing things that normally lead to violence. They're lying to each other. They're accusing each other. And the great thrill everyone feels is partly that transgression and the freedom to kind of hone those skills that are, you know, normally life and death skills for us, at least in the history of the species. I love all that.
Yeah, I never have thought about it that way. But when I see my cat do something that's playful, it's just practicing for murder.
Yes.
Like
yes.
In practice. And ironically, I play the game PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds pretty often.
Oh, yeah.
And like, basically, I'm practicing murder. And it appeals to some sort of part of me that is difficult to describe.
A key element of gaming that many platforms and trends have gotten wrong, and VR is actually one of those right now, is that you have minimal input for a maximum output. Something like Mario, you press a button and you jump, right? Or you like press another button and then you run. These are things that take a lot of effort and you can do them with minimal effort and have this like larger than life like output. This transaction between something that's really easy to do, like or maybe not easy, but something that is easier to do in the abstract, and you convert it into something that's really grandiose.
So thanks for hanging out with us, and we want to thank Mills for hanging out with us as well. He's a great friend of ours, and he is one of the most interesting people to listen to that I have ever heard talk. What do you think about gaming and design? How are they related? We'd love to hear from you. You can message us on Twitter at BreadTime.fm.
Or check out our website at BreadTime.fm.
Feel free to reach out with us with topics you'd like to hear on the show.
Yeah, and if you have a game you'd like me to play with Charlie, preferably where he loses, let me know. I would love to play that.